This program was brought to you by the Academy Opus Caseus, whose training programs bring cheese professionals to the next level.
Hey, I'm Jimmy Carboni from Beer Sessions Radio. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Hello and welcome to Cutting the Curd, broadcasting live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This is Greg Blaze, your host. I want to say a quick congrats to all the winners at the 2015 U.S. Championship Cheese Contest that happened this past week in Wisconsin. And speaking of U.S. cheese, today we're not going to be talking about U.S. cheese. We're going to be taking a trip outside the United States to India, and hopefully this will be one of many international cheese discussions we have this year. Mansi Jasani is on the line with me from Mumbai. How are you doing today, Mansi?
Hi, I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good.
Congratulations to everyone who won.
Yeah, that's fantastic. We're pre-recording this episode today and on our usual Monday 5 p.m. time slot so that Mansi could join us. It's 10 a.m. here in New York and 8 p.m. in India. Is that right?
Yes, that's about right.
Thank you so much for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
So Mansi is the founder and operator of the Cheese Collective in Mumbai, where she makes a few varieties of goat cheese. So I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about your company and also tell us about your journey to cheese. Like, how did you get into it?
Yeah, sure. So basically, I was in New York for a while, and I worked at Murray's Cheese. I did an internship there. The moment I walked into Murray's, it was like Disneyland for me.
Oh, yeah.
And I knew I wanted to go back to Bombay, to India, and start, you know, my own cheese store, my own cheese company. And I took back everything that I started off with was all in New York, in Murray's, with Brian Ralph and Rob Coffert. So I owe it to them. And it kind of started when I did the boot camp with them. And at the end of it, at the end of the 3 days, I still wasn't cheesed out. I could still go on. I could still eat some more cheese. So I think that's when I knew. I was like, yeah, this is me. So in Bombay, it's completely different scenario. India as a country is the largest supplier of milk worldwide.
Yeah, you have a lot of milk there.
It's the largest producer, one of the largest consumers, but the largest producer for sure. And we have a great variety of buffalo milk also.
Yeah, that's what I heard. And are you making cheese out of any of that milk at all?
Not yet, no. So what I'm doing is I am making some fresh cheese.
Yeah.
And I'm curating the cheese from cheesemakers across India.
So you have a cheese shop and you are a cheese maker.
Yes, a maker and monger.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And right now it's small artisan. There's still, the market in India is still at a very nascent stage. It still needs time to grow, but there's great potential and people with adventurous palates, they're interested in trying out new cheese. And there's a great ton of cheesemakers also across India, especially up north. And in Kashmir, there's this Dutch cheesemaker in Kashmir. There is a lot of French cheesemakers in Auroville and Pondicherry, which is, again, south of India. And then there are a couple of people in Bombay and Delhi and Bangalore. So the metro cities and up in the hills is where a lot of the cheese making and consumption is right now.
Why is that, do you think, as opposed to the other areas? Is it because people travel outside of the country and settle in those areas? They want cuisine from other countries? Or is it just the culture is sort of organically grown to make cheese there?
Yeah, it's just better. The quality of milk is better up north, and you know, in the hilly areas,
yeah,
where it's drier and not as humid. But there have been people. Like, for example, I am also curating a cheese from Pondicherry, which is called Le Pondicherry,
uh-huh,
and it's a French cow milk cheese wrapped and aged in curry patta, and curry patta is curry leaf.
Sure.
So it's, again, a super unique cheese. Not going to get that anywhere else.
No.
So there's stuff like that happening. And on the other side, this is just less than 1% of the cheese, you know, the cheese scenario, where most of it is taken over by processed cheese.
Yeah, a lot of it goes to large dairy concerns,
yeah,
correct?
Yeah, so that's not nice. So that's the scenario right now.
So,
but I'm doing my bit with, you know, making some cheese, having cheese classes, encouraging cheese makers to make some more, make a good variety, use good milk, and it's good. Cheese and ideas and items that go with it.
Sure. So you're teaching now others to make cheese. You're taking what you learned at Murray's and you're translating it to people who want to make cheese in your own country.
Yes, that's true. Through other cheesemakers.
Who are those guys? Who else is making cheese? Who have you taught to make cheese over there?
So there's one of my colleagues, Aditya Raghavan. He is actually in Bombay born. Guy who is also living in Canada.
Yeah.
So he keeps coming down every few months to teach people how to make mozzarella and ricotta and cream cheese. He even did a thing in the Andaman Nicobar Islands where there's lack of, you know, milk itself.
Yeah.
But he made a bunch of fresh cheeses there, and I'm teaching people how to make fresh soft cheeses, and also teaching people how to, you know, set up a cheese platter and how to cut cheese, how to serve cheese, cooking with cheese, stuff like that. But cheese and, you know, wine pairing, cheese and beer pairing.
That's fantastic.
The basics, which are still new here, so.
Now, I've always thought, being a cheesemonger myself, that cheese, the making of cheese, and as I learned about it, the history of cheese is born out of a need to preserve the milk, or to preserve the nutrients that are found in the milk. Are you passing along that, or do you share that belief or that philosophy when you teach people how to make cheese?
Yes, yes, definitely. Especially, so many people are lactose intolerant here.
Yeah.
Also, so I've been telling them everything from the basic, you know, nutrients and, you know, the calcium, the protein, and all the nutritional facts of cheese, but also the fun element of cheese, because cheese is just such a wonderful, beautiful thing, and I just want everyone to eat as much good cheese as possible.
That's fantastic. I share your love for cheese that way.
Yeah, definitely.
I read in an article in an interview that was done with you that you said your first memory of cheese was eating a little bit of string cheese maybe in a park when you were a little girl.
Yes, that's true.
That's awesome. You still do when you make your cheese? Do you still do you remember that when you're on the swings? And
I do remember that. Although I love artisan cheese now and I know what is good cheese.
Sure.
A lot of my memories are about what was available at that time, which was, you know, a string cheese or a slice of cheese. And, yes, that is one of my first early memories. It's also, you know, stealing cheese in the middle of the night.
Yeah, sure.
Opening up the fridge and,
that's classic.
You know, gobbling up some slices.
That's the best. I liked that. I took from some of the research I did, I took that that to heart, because I have some of those same memories. When I was little, I didn't have a lot of good cheese around me either, but the stuff that I had stuck with me, and I think that's cheese. That cheese does that to people, and it obviously has done that to you, which is great, I think. So I read also that storage and transportation are the biggest challenges that cheesemakers face in addition to India's hot climate. I was wondering if you could talk to me a little bit about what other challenges you've faced, you know, starting your company and making it viable.
Oh, definitely. So everything, the first challenge, major challenge is the milk itself. So although we make so much milk, the quality and the consistency of it varies.
Yeah.
So to find a good supplier who is constant is a big challenge. It's number one challenge. And not just getting the milk, but again, it all goes down to what they're eating and how they're taken care of. So that is the biggest challenge, procuring the milk from the farm to, since I'm an urban cheesemaker currently,
yeah.
But I'm shifting soon to the hills, so I'm happy.
Well, it's important. Milk and the source of your milk is the most important thing to make the cheese. I mean,
exactly.
And
exactly.
Do you find that you said that varies? So you have some concerns sometimes about how maybe the animals are treated or how the milk gets to you.
Right. So right now I have, you know, just one good source of milk.
Right.
whereas other cheesemakers across the world have either have their own herd or they have a variety of, you know, good sources of milk close to their cheesemaking, cheesemaking room. So that's one of the challenges where there are very, very few, less number of, like for goat's milk, for example, there's literally just one good supplier in the whole country.
And that's what you
country.
Make, correct? You make goat's cheese.
Yes, that's correct.
So you have an even more difficult time finding milk. Cause you said,
yeah.
You get it, you say, from one person or one cooperative dairy in the south of the country?
Yes, that's true. Just one. It's not even in my state. It's in another state. So it comes by the train, but it comes in a very secure box. So it's super fresh by the time it reaches me.
Yeah.
And then I make cheese the minute it, you know, reaches me. But so again, because I am, you know, I'm lucky enough that I can figure out a route from the, because of the train network. But there are other places where I possibly would get good source of cow milk or buffalo milk, or maybe another goat source, but I may not be able to procure it in time.
The logistics must just be a nightmare in a country of that size.
Yeah, logistics. And then once it reaches you, it's the storage, and doing it from home is a challenge. Even when I'm shifting bays in a couple of months, it's going to take up a lot of construction because of the humidity, the weather, and it's not just a hot climate. Again, it gets really, really bad when the monsoons set in also.
Sure. Can you
There's
tell
a whole bunch of, microorganisms and insects and, all of that. Fauna, flora comes with all of that, which is good, but we need to take all these measures. And I'm following, all the American, because I did my another course at the Vermont Institute of Artisan Cheese Making.
Mm-hmm.
So we learned all the American guidelines and safety measures, and I intend to use those.
But so what you said briefly is that so all of the microclimates, all of the sort of saturated heavy air that's full of living organisms is good in a way, but you have to sort of block out the ones that you don't want to affect your cheese, correct? Is that what you're...
Right.
And you got to also make sure that you don't break the, like you said, you don't break the cold chain when your milk is coming from so far away. Because every time it makes a stop, it must just be, there's that tenuous situation. We have all that fluid milk. Just you got to keep it cold or at least safe. Wow. And now, do you also import cheeses from outside of India to sell at your co-op or at your cheese? You have a shop that you sell, so people can come and buy.
Not yet, not yet.
Okay.
So I'm just supplying to restaurants, caterers, chefs, and individual customers.
Uh-huh.
But yes, I intend to have a shop in the phase two of my, phase one is to set up a small creamery, and right after that would be a shop. Once I've established the shop is when I will look at importing cheese.
That's fantastic.
Again, importing is, I want to import good artisan, cheese from all over the world. And there's so many that I've been exposed to and so many that I love, and I can't wait to share it with the rest of India. But for now, again, it's still at a very nascent stage. So I feel there's still some time for me and for India to get the good imported cheese, because the duty, there's a lot of import duty and other taxes.
Yeah.
And in fact, lately there have been a lot of labeling changes also.
And we're going through that here as well.
Of course.
How you manage your ingredients lists and things like that. All your paperwork have to be completely in line with everything you do.
Yes, completely. Yeah. And another important thing, especially when it comes to making cheese in India, we are not allowed to use animal rennet.
Really? So all the cheeses are veggie over there? Huh.
The ones that are made here, yes.
So you can eat them, but you can't make them. Why is that? Is there a reason for that law?
So a lot of our laws in general were made during the British era.
Okay.
And right after.
Yeah.
Right after we got independence, and I'm sure they were updated, but not as much as I would like it, especially in terms to cheese.
Yeah.
because they have definitions for just, say, you know, 20 probable varieties of cheese. Like, they'll actually write Gouda, and then, it, you know, they'd have specifications of how much, you know, fat should be or how much cream, all of that. But that's it. That they've listed about 20 cheeses. That's it. Nothing else. Now, what about the rest of the cheeses?
Wow.
You know, there's nothing. So one reason is that. The other reason is because most of it is processed cheese making, right? They don't.
Yeah.
So a lot of people, like, for example, in my state, when I knew a group of people who wanted to start brewing beer,
yeah,
they had to write down a new law
because
there wasn't an existing law.
And so
they had to write it down, get it approved, and then start brewing beer in the state of Maharashtra, where we live. So there's some sort of ambiguity in that when it comes to whether raw milk is allowed to be used or not. But it's been very clearly stated that a non-animal rennet has to be used. And I think it's because of the Hindu beliefs that cow is holy, you know, the cow is holy. But in that, even, rennet from a calf or a kid is also not permitted. So it's just the law.
Does that make it tough for you as a cheesemaker? I mean, is it do you find that the plant enzymes are weaker or different? Do they coagulate the milk in a different way that makes it less favorable?
I use microbial rennet, so it's pretty good.
Yeah.
A lot of the other processed cheesemakers also. Basically, a lot of cheese. Everyone in India uses microbial rennet more so, and it's a good. It's not a bad alternative. It gives a good clean sort of finish and taste to it the cheese. But of course, I mean, you know, the whole romance behind it. And I'm a vegetarian, and I'm paying this, but yeah.
No. Well, also, to make farmstead cheese or the a lot of cheesemakers,
right.
European cheesemakers, if they practice animal husbandry, they're using their animals, you know, so they're using the rennet from the stomachs of the herds of goats that produce the milk. It's just a part of the way that they use all of the things that the animals give them. I just think that's interesting. It reminds me of the blue laws up here in the Northeast about alcohol, where, you know, you're not allowed to sell alcohol here before noon on a Sunday retail level. They're just leftover laws of past colonies. And those are left over from when the British Empire was over here as well.
Right.
That's fascinating. Well, look, we're going to have...
So there's a paper there.
No, that's good. That's great to learn. So we're going to have to take a short break, but we're going to come right back and talk more with Mansi Jasani of the Cheese Collective in Mumbai.
The Academy Opus Caseus is the cheese industry's unique center for professional development, offering training for cheese professionals ready to move their careers to the next level. The Academy is the only professional cheese school integrating hands-on practice, formal instruction, and curriculum-related visits in every course. The Academy's core courses for mongers and affineurs are offered at the Mons facilities in France, and abridged courses are offered in Vermont, California, and London. A structured discipline of sensory analysis is practiced daily. The Academy has been recognized by the American Cheese Society as an approved education center for those preparing for the Certified Cheese Professional Exam. Here's a reading of a quote from Kevin Palmaccio, a graduate of the program.
The balance of time is what sets essential foundations apart from other educational opportunities. While the classroom is important, spending time at the goat farm and working alongside the Mons staff immersed us in real work and taught me real skills I've already applied in my career. As a relative newcomer to the cheese business, daily concentration on sensory analysis was paramount. As a cheesemonger, I'm now in a better position to familiarize myself with a wide range of products and sell with more confidence.
For more information and to apply for courses, visit their website at academy-mons.com. That's academie-mons.com.
Thanks so much for listening to Cutting the Curd. We're back with Mansi Jassani of the Cheese Collective in Mumbai, India. When we think Indian cheese here in America, we usually think of paneer and we think of ghee or clarified butter. But as we've learned talking to Mansi in the first half of this episode, there's so much more that's starting to go on over there. So Mansi, I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about just about the culture of dairy consumption in India in general and you know, how people consume cheese there on a whole.
Yeah, sure. So again, India as a country has been has been consuming milk as is around 70 to 75% of the milk is consumed in its liquid form, and the other forms are butter and ghee, like you mentioned, and just about 1%, 1 to 1.5% is cheese, which includes the paneer, which is the cottage, you know, like a cottage cheese. And another really interesting observation about paneer is that the, since there's so, you know, 30% vegetarians in India, and the rest of Indians, they look at paneer as sort of a side dish, like a substitute for chicken or substitute for a meat.
Yes.
So you'd have a chicken, you know, you have a chicken tikka with a gravy. Yeah. So it would essentially be the same gravy, but they would have paneer cubes instead.
And you see that here even in Indian food restaurants here in America too. And as my vegetarian friends who sell cheese, they love the paneer. I do too. And it's basically a pulled, it's a hard ricotta paneer, correct?
Correct.
Coagulated milk. So we talked a little bit before the break about the regulations, or you were talking to me about the regulations on rennet. But are there any regulations on raw milk?
So again, it's not very clear about because in India as a country is very okay, has historically been okay with consuming raw milk. It's encouraged, especially if you're on a farm and especially in North India, there it's like a, you know, kind of like a saying that Punjabi men drink milk straight from the cow or the buffalo, and that's why they're so strong and well built. So
nice.
They take pride in having a lot of cream and full fat milk. So they don't shy away from full fat milk basically, and similarly raw milk. It's definitely encouraged. So there's no clear cut rule about, you know, making a raw milk cheese and aging it for a certain time before selling it or any of that. But yes, there is for fresh cheeses. I think, you know, you have to make it from pasteurized milk. It's just safer. So for a fresh cheese, everyone makes it from pasteurized milk, and aged cheese, raw milk is fine. Yeah.
That sounds pretty safe, especially considering the fact that how does milk get distributed in India? Does it passes through? There's a large collective, correct? Or there's something like 15 million producers of milk in India, or something like that.
There was I think in 2013 there were about 132 million metric tons. You know.
Yeah, you have
produce.
To.
So that was a lot of milk. A lot of it, yes, comes from cooperatives. There's possibly around, say, 500 liters a year on an average that's produced by these small farms.
Yeah.
And then that collectively goes to the. So Amul is the cooperative.
Yeah, that was started in 1940 or 1946, correct?
Started the White Revolution. And that has really helped the country. In terms of, especially there's so much, malnutrition and hunger and, you know, poverty, and milk as an ingredient, as a source of, you know, calcium, especially to kids. So even though it's a cooperative and it's, you know, it's all homogenized and ultra pasteurized, it has helped seep some of its nutrients to, you know, a ton of people.
Yeah, that's that I was reading about that co-op, and it seems like that helped to change the whole culture of dairy consumption in India. Obviously, it did. And then the whole point of a co-op is for you to be able to distribute your own milk or your own goods throughout wherever you're at without interference from, I guess, unnecessary merchants or people who would tax you. So I just thought that was crazy. And then it started out with a few hundred liters of milk, right? It's like just a tiny bit of milk and grew into this massive cooperative dairy, which is great.
It is. And there's so much everything, like employment and, education. And all of that just came with it. So it was a really good movement that took place. It was much needed. And Amul processed cheese, Amul cheese, as it's called, is literally what everyone grew up with in India. Like, if you talk about name one cheese that every single Indian knows, I'm not talking about a certain number, a certain percentage of society in cities. I'm talking about
everybody.
General India.
Yeah.
It will be Amul cheese. Yeah.
It's like the Kraft singles of
yes.
But with a better story behind it, with a better purpose.
yeah, a little bit of a that's heartfelt.
Yeah, well, that's fantastic. I think that's an interesting progression of the culture of the consumption of dairy. First, you had to get the dairy from the farms to all of the people by manipulating the trade and getting everybody to be a co-op. And now it seems like there's a second, more subtle much more pleasant revolution going on of artisan cheese making. And would you agree with that?
Yes, definitely. Artisan cheese making is on a rise in India. And there are a couple of large French cheese-making companies also that are investing, seeing potential, especially with the abundance of milk. And they're setting up plants here. They're setting up cheese factories right next to the sources of milk. And I feel in the next 5 years itself, there's going to be a bunch of cheese that is going to be produced here. A lot of it gets again consumed with in pizzas and pastas and just like general like sandwiches, not eaten as is on a platter, not enjoyed as much, but it's growing, and I'm very excited and hopeful with all the new stuff that is about to come. Have you heard of Pav Bhaji?
I have not. Maybe you can talk to me a little bit about that.
It's out of context in a way, but it's basically a bun, like a bread bun,
uh-huh,
with mixed veggies and a lot of butter.
That sounds good.
Mashed, mixed it. And it has a special masala to it. It's called Pav Bhaji masala.
Uh-huh.
And so it's a masala flavor that is also, everyone in India is familiar with that kind
sure.
of masala taste. So what I'm also trying to do is, one of the things I'm looking to make is a kabakoo, with instead of herbs de province, I'm going to put like whole Pav Bhaji masala.
Oh, wow.
Spices.
That's great. And so, kabakoo is the cheese that you make now,
fusion.
Right?
Yeah.
But I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Tell me a little more about that fusion you were just talking about.
Sorry. I just get so excited when it comes
great.
To talking about cheese.
Yeah. So you're going to make a little goat cheese. You make a little French-inspired goat cheeses, like Loire River Valley-inspired goat cheeses, correct?
Little chèvre quartine shaped, and I'm going to be making a feta-style cheese with
uh-huh.
pure goat milk. I've called it Aristeus,
yeah.
which is after the Greek god.
Of course.
Cheese making. So I'm having fun naming them. I'm having fun making them. And yeah, and just.
It also sounds like you're fun. It must be great for you just to know that you're at the forefront of that and be a part of that small community of people and that you're making a difference in what you're doing, that you're seeing people come to you and ask for the cheese or the culture of how cheese is consumed in India, you're directly affecting that and how affecting change or making people see things in a new and, like you said, fun way. Then that must be a great feeling for you.
Yes, it definitely puts me on a high. I love that feeling of talking to people about cheese and seeing the passion, you know, expand. Especially when I did a class with children, with 4 to 10-year-olds, and there were about 40 kids.
Yeah.
And they were so frank in their opinion, and
children are the
they
best
had no, bias towards blue cheese, especially. And it's just inspiring. I'm constantly learning, constantly, you know, spreading the passion.
No, as a cheesemonger, I love that too. I know that I was afraid of my food when I was a child a little bit, and it's great when you see kids eating things like that. That you know, cheeses that smell, or they taste kind of they're kind of a strong taste. But you say that children have no preconceived notions of right and wrong in that. You know, you can shape what their palates are like when they're young, which is great.
Yes, exactly.
That's fantastic. Well, I wanted to ask you one more question. I was wondering if you could just talk to my listeners and say what can artisan cheesemakers and you know and consumers of artisan cheese learn from the cheese movement in Mumbai?
So are we talking about we need to talk about cheese, Indian cheese.
Yes.
Apart from cheese made in India by other people. So there's a bunch of Indian origin cheese. Apart from paneer, there's kalari in Kashmir, there's churpi near the border of, you know, Nepal, Bhutan, and northeast India, and then there's bandel. So bandel was made by the Portuguese in the town of Bandel near West Bengal, again, northeast India, and it's a heavily smoked cheese, extremely dry, and it smells like a cigarette.
Sure.
To be, you know, it's that kind of smoky, not like wood smoky.
Tobacco.
And it's very, very highly salted, very high on sodium, and it travels really well.
Sure.
It crumbles a bit. It's grayish in color. And, this one time we made a, salsa from it. We made a non-salted salsa, and we used the cheese on top of the bandel on top of that, and it went really well. So it can go as
it's called bandel,
highly smoky feta substitute maybe.
So it's a salted,
but in really curdy, small doses.
That's a curd, like a cow's milk cheese, right? So cow's milk cheese, heavily salted
and
it's smoked.
Very, very crude in the way it looks and the way it's made.
All gnarly and bumpy, kind of looking and like brown from the smoking process.
Right. Right, yeah, grayish brown, yeah.
Sure.
And kalari, again, is used inside sort of like a roti bread, kind of. It's stuffed inside with green chilies, and that's eaten as a dish. And churpi is, again, really chewy.
Yeah.
It's a chewy, almost dark, really dark brown, blackish kind of cheese.
Blackish.
Which recently I read an article, it's being used as a dog treat in some of the countries.
Okay.
It's good. Dogs are getting good cheese.
Yes. Hey, dogs have to have good cheese too. And then there was a Kashmiri cheese you had mentioned in the beginning of our little question here. What's that one?
Sorry, which one was it?
You said that there was a Kashmiri specialty also that you had mentioned.
Yeah, that's the kalari.
That's the smoke.
Kalari, Kashmir.
Yeah.
Bandel, smoked.
Yes.
And salty. And churpi is northeast Indian, kind of originating in Nepal and Bhutan.
So most of the cheese that's made, or most of the cheese that's consumed, from what I'm gathering, is it comes from the north of the country.
Right.
And is the south the cuisine? Is it just too hot there? Is it for cheese and dairy
hot,
consumption?
Super humid, and the only cheese that's now being made there is is much much later. It's not an ancient cheese making, section. But also surprisingly, there is a lot of cheese in our sweet dishes that that I need to talk to you about.
Sure.
So there's a bunch of there's khoya, which is like a really condensed milk, but it kind of goes as a dairy product more. than a cheese per se, but it's used in as one of the main ingredients in a lot of sweet dishes. There's this thing called laddu. There is breed of rasmalai, and then there is also rasgulla itself, which again my friend Adi had, and I were talking about it the other day, and he also pointed out to me that rasgulla, the way it is made, is so similar to ricotta.
Ah, interesting.
So it's it's much more spongy, but of a ricotta type of a cousin probably, and it has it's in a spongy ball, like a round shape, and you put it in a sweetened liquid.
Yeah.
Very watery sweet. So it's dipped in that, and then the way you have it is you take out the ball, you squeeze it, take out all the liquid water, the sweet liquid water.
Yeah.
And that's, you consume it. And you need to go try it at an Indian sweet shop.
Sure.
In America, and you'll see the texture. It's very similar to ricotta.
That's fantastic. I think it's great that you are so passionate about not only the cheeses that the cheese recipes you've imported from your own life experiences, but also the indigenous the way that dairy is used in your country. That's fantastic. That's great.
Yeah, definitely, it's about cheese and slow food and slow cheese and how it affects every history and the industry also, and about education. All of that related to cheese is what I like.
That's great. And when you discover, as many of us have who love cheese and how we work, that just becomes the window through which you see the world around you. It's fantastic. And it's a good view from that window, if you take
definitely.
It.
Definitely.
Well, I want to thank all of our listeners for tuning in, and I want to thank you so much to my guest, Mansi Jassani.
You're most welcome.
Your passion is fantastic. I'm looking forward to meeting you at the Cheesemonger Invitational when you come over this year. And
definitely.
And we'll
I'll be there at ECS and in Bra for Slow Cheese, so.
Well, thank you so much for your time, and you enjoy your Friday evening in Mumbai. Take care.
Yes, thank you. Have a good day.
Sure. Be sure to tune in next week, guys. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.